Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And with us now is Matthew Dowd, ABC News political contributor, formerly a political consultant for Democrats and Republicans. Earlier in his career, including chief strategist for the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign in 2004. He also writes for the National Journal now. After President Obama's reelection last week, Dowd was widely quoted calling the Republicans a madmen party in a modern family world. Matthew, I always appreciate your work on This Week with George Stephanopoulos. Thanks a lot for giving us a few minutes today.
Good morning. It's always great to be with you.
Before we get to the election, are you surprised that David Petraeus resigned as CIA director, even in the most high-level government jobs? An affair by itself is not necessarily a firing offense.
I have a hard time being surprised much anymore about anything that goes on, actually, with all of the different, you know, manifestations. We'll obviously learn more about this, what this meant. There's probably more to this than just purely an affair. I'm sure there's some question about access to information and all of that. But for a guy that has always been, presented himself as straight-laced, buttoned up, and disciplined, I'm not surprised that something like this, once it was discovered, he had to leave. It just did not fit who he was. So I'm not surprised, actually.
Apparently, the FBI probe that uncovered the affair was months old. The White House claims it was told only last week. Could there have been a cover-up of this until after the election? That's a scandal in any way?
Obviously that will be learned. I would seriously doubt that. This is something that it looked like it was investigated going on down and below, and it wouldn't rise, obviously, to the president or the White House's concern until they've sort of gotten it more nailed down and there was some concern about it. I don't think there was, in my view, and as I say, well, no, I don't think there was some sort of cover-up. It's just how these investigations and things work, and then they finally get to the level that they need to be sort of confronted, and I think that's what happened. So I doubt there was any kind of sort of cover-up. I just think this is how it works.
And presumably people wouldn't have voted for Obama or not based on whether David Petraeus was having an affair. So there's not much there, for those who want to pursue it on talk radio or wherever, I don't think. But there was something more serious going on with Petraeus, a suspicion that the CIA blew the initial intelligence on the Benghazi raid, leading UN Ambassador Susan Rice to go on television and say that the attack came out of the anti-Mohammed video protests, which now apparently was proven wrong. Is it your impression that that's what happened, that the CIA and perhaps Petraeus himself got the intelligence wrong?
Well, and we're learning along the way what exactly happened and all that. And I said this on the Sunday show a couple of weeks ago, the idea that we're supposed to get all the answers and so many people demanding that there's some sort of problem or there's answers in 2 weeks when it took, 2 years before we really had any answers on Iraq. And obviously we lost men and women in the course of that and billions of dollars based on a false premise
right.
In the course of that whole thing. And it took months and years before we discovered that. I think there is some question. Now we've seen various things about the CIA's ability to sort of know exactly what's going on in various places over the last 10 years around the world. I think the world and the terrorism is a confusing and unclear situation, so you don't always have, distinct answers in all of this. But I think there should be some concerns raised about whether or not we really have the ability or the best mechanisms in place to know what's going on. And this is not a Democratic problem or a Republican problem. I think this is a problem that's more systematic and systemic in the organization, I think.
I wonder if it has implications for who the next Secretary of State is, because what the Republican accusation has been is that Susan Rice somehow was trying to cover up the fact that it was a 9/11 terrorist attack so the Obama administration could still claim it was successful on terrorism in what remained of the election campaign. If she really just got bad information, because that's what the CIA had at that point, then it more clears her name and it's easier for Obama to appoint her as Secretary of State to succeed Hillary Clinton, which a lot of people think he wants to do.
Well, I think that what we've heard so far, and if you looked at it in a clear, unbiased, objective way, it is a case of bad information flowing up and then announcements being made based on bad information. I have seen not a single piece of evidence, real evidence, other than sort of accusations, that there was somehow some nefarious thing going on, that there was a cover-up or anything like that. It's much more the case of the initial information, which often happens, as you know, Brian, mm-hmm. in these situations like Benghazi and like other situations where the first information coming up isn't always the best information. I think that's what this is much more about than it is some sort of problem with like the White House having covered up something. We'll learn that, but that's much more of an accusation at this point. It's coming from a place of bias than anything else.
ABC News political analyst Matthew Dowd with us. We can't take a few phone calls for him. You watch him on ABC this week. Never had a chance to talk to Matthew Dowd. Here you go. 212. Actually, which phone? Are we still on the... Do we have our old phone number back? No? Okay, so sorry, folks. Because of the power outage we had, we're still using a temporary call-in line, which is 646-829-3980, 646-829-3980, our post-Sandy phone number, which will revert to the regular number one of these days. All right, let's go on to the election and what comes next. First, as chief strategist for the Bush-Cheney re-election in 2004, how similar do you think these two re-elections were? I see at least one possible parallel. The challengers were surprised at how well the incumbent party got out their vote in the face of declining enthusiasm. In other words, the Bush-Cheney vote showed up in 2004 for the re-election, even though the Democrats were, you know, so vitriolic in their revulsion, and we see the same thing with the Obama folks, the lack of enthusiasm in the base that was so well reported, the declining support of independents, which was real, and yet they got out the vote enough to win.
Well, I think that obviously is a huge parallel, but there's multiple parallels. 2004 to me and 2012 were extremely similar from not only the end result, but also as many points along the way. This is, and in both cases, you had an incumbent president who at the time didn't have high job approval numbers like other presidents are being reelected. You had a majority of the country feeling like, you know, the country was off on the wrong track and not going in the right direction. You had a troubled economy. You had various factors that looked like that the out party was going to succeed and win. And then both parties obviously nominated somebody from Massachusetts who had problems with their authenticity in many ways. John Kerry did. There was some question about whether or not he was authentic and strong. Mitt Romney was the same question. And then you had an election that basically unfolded where Barack Obama had a lead after the conventions, just like Bush did in 2004, and then he had a very problematic first debate, just like Bush did, and the race closed dramatically suddenly, gone from a 4 or 5 point lead to probably a 1 point lead or basically dead even. But the advantages inherent in the election, just like Bush in 2004, were benefiting Barack Obama, and that as it unfolded, a race that looked like it was going to be very tight and very close. To many people, in my view, it didn't. I had the Sunday before, I had said that I thought he was going to win 300-plus electoral votes and squeak out the popular vote victory because I thought it was a very similar case to 2004. Huh. That happened. And as you say, a huge part of the dynamics was the turnout models and all of that, which Republicans had misread, much like Democrats misread in 2004. And I think there's also something else going on, which is the changing nature of the electorate, which Republicans would have won some elections along the way, but the changing American electorate is really what's more fundamentally going on around here. And you have a Republican Party that is out of step at present with what the American electorate is and is becoming.
Hence your comment that the Republicans are a madmen party in a modern family world. Is that more about the social issues or is it economic policy too?
It's both. It's both social issues and economic issues. I mean, you basically have a party that's trying to run up the score among white males, and white males are the fastest declining group in America right now. The largest rising are single women, Latino voters, Asian voters, and then there's this whole other group of people that are basically unaffiliated on religious issues and unaffiliated on religion, which is another important group, which is now voting overwhelmingly for Democrats. all of that scenario, while Republicans have been able to win some elections, has created it much more difficult for Republicans to win. They have to figure out, they have to do some soul searching, some serious soul searching as a party to see where they want to be, because otherwise, if they don't change, they're going to be a minority party.
I was floored yesterday watching Fox News Sunday to hear conservative icon William Kristol seem to say, never mind about the central tenet of the party platform, don't raise taxes on the rich. Listen, first he criticizes the selection of Romney as the nominee.
I think we have a huge middle class problem there. The particular nominee the Republicans had was unfortunate in that respect. 4 years after a huge Wall Street crisis, you nominate someone from Wall Street.
Then William Kristol continues on taxing the rich.
Let people float new ideas. Let's have a serious debate. Don't scream and yell when one person says, you know what, it won't kill the country if we raise taxes a little bit on millionaires. I really won't, I don't think. I don't really understand why Republicans don't take Obama's offer to freeze taxes for everyone below $250,000, make it $500,000, make it a million. Really, the Republican Party is going to fall on its sword to defend a bunch of millionaires?
Whoa, William Kristol, now you tell us. Matthew Dowd, does a comment like that mean the whole campaign on some level was a fraud, shouting doom and gloom if tax rates go up 4.5 points on the highest earners?
Well, I think both parties have a problem with the precedent they set and the evidence they lay out as what's going to happen to the economy. I think the Republican Party's idea that you can't raise taxes on the wealthy in a struggling economy is somehow bad. There's no historical evidence that that's true, that you can't raise money. You can't raise revenue on people that make a lot of money. And Democrats actually premise that you can't cut spending in a struggling economy also doesn't have historical precedence. I hope this election basically provided a path for both sides to come together and do a balanced approach, as the president actually talked about in the immediate aftermath of the election. You cannot ask a huge part of this country to sacrifice, whether it's entitlements and other things, without calling some level of revenue or some level of tax on wealthy people in this country. And even though you can't solve all the problems by increasing taxes on the wealthy, it actually is the only way and it feels the only right way is if you have a sense of shared sacrifice that goes across and shared investment across the board on everybody. And I think Bill Kristol out loud finally acknowledged what many of us already knew. And sometimes, as you know, Brian, in your own life, personally and professionally and in politics, it takes a loss for you to evolve to a place where you actually can admit what the truth is, which is we all have to give in this thing in order to solve the problem.
Mark in Weston, Connecticut, you're on WNYC with Matthew Dowd. Hello.
Matthew, I have one question. It's kind of technical. We've heard now that the Romney campaign ran out of money this spring, so therefore they couldn't respond to the Bain Capital ad. What I don't understand is we watched Kerry 8 years ago hawk his paintings to get money to keep his campaign going. Why didn't Romney loan money to his campaign?
They were swimming in money, weren't they?
Money wasn't the issue,
was it, Matthew?
No, I don't think money was never the issue in the course of this, because they also had the super PACs that were sort of loaded for bear in the spring and the summer that they could have done this. I think this ultimately was not about, you know, this was not a race won on tactics. It was a race basically run on brands, and it was a race basically run on what the country actually in the end trusted. And as I say, I think Mitt Romney was a part of the problem, but Mitt Romney was only a part of the problem as he reinforced a Republican brand problem. And he reinforced a Republican brand problem that evidenced itself on Election Day in that the Republican Party is just out of step with huge swaths of the American electorate, not only demographically, as I talked about, but geographically in this country. You cannot win in this country as a party if you basically write off huge parts of both coasts, and now basically you're beginning to write off the Midwest. You cannot win as a party.
On the money, there's some talk out there, and I don't personally tend to believe it, that the big money was chastised, you know, in the post-Citizens United world. Even though $6 billion combined was spent on this campaign, that so much of it wound up, you know, supporting mostly Republican candidates who didn't win, that corporations and rich individuals are going to be more cautious next time. Do you think that's real or a myth?
Well, we'll find out. I think they're going to engage, because if they believe that politics or something is going to benefit them or whatever their cause is, they'll engage in it. I think they may be more reticent to sort of just write checks over to people that basically, based on somebody's reputation, they're writing a check to. And I refer then in this case to Karl Rove and all that, who basically presented information and evidence in the course of the campaign and at the end of the campaign that wasn't objective. And by anybody's reading of the tea leaves, was not objective information, especially in the last 2 months of this, by any of us who could look at this and see. So they may have some reluctance in who they turn over their money to. I still think money and politics is going to be here, and it's going to be here for the remaining lives and our children's lives and our grandchildren's lives. But I think those Republican givers may be reluctant to sort of turn it over with a blank check to people based on evidence that isn't real.
Dorian in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Matthew Dowd. Hello.
Hi, thank you. Matthew, I was just wondering what you think of how the president has positioned himself about the budget debate after the election. I mean, it sounds to me like he's sounding very similar to how he sounded during the campaign, and I wonder if you think that's the right approach, or should he take a more conciliatory tone?
Well, and one of the things, and I wrote this in a column I had this weekend, which is the difference between putting a coalition together that helps you win an election and putting together a coalition that helps you govern and lead. And I think the mistake that Bush made is he put together a coalition in 2004 that won an election, but he never put together a coalition that could lead the country. I think the president needs to do that. Even though he won this election, you have 48 or 49% of the country that basically voted against him. You had white males vote against him. You had married people vote against him. You had huge part of the heartland vote against him. You had people that go to church vote against him. You have huge elements of the country that voted against him, which I think he has to figure out a way to bridge in order to lead. I actually think the president is going to be able to get a deal done, one of which is I think the president understands that there's only way to get this deal done is to give and to figure out ways to do that in a way as compromise. But two, I think the Republicans are really backed into a corner. And if they sort of don't figure out a way to compromise, and I think Bill Kristol and other people's signals are over the last few days is a beginning process of that, is I think the president understands it, and I hope the president follows his words with various actions. He's supposedly going to have meetings with Republicans over the course of the next few weeks before Thanksgiving and Christmas to get that done. I think the president wants that to happen. I hope his actions continue to follow his words.
And we'll talk later in the program with Obama biographer Jody Kantor about whether the second term can be a capital T transformative hope and change presidency, as Barack Obama always hoped to have. But last thing before you go, Matthew Dowd, I'm just curious if you have a take on Chris Christie's massive embrace of Obama in the last days of the campaign after Sandy. He could have respected the president and asked for help for New Jersey without going nearly as far as he did. What was his reason for doing that? Do you have an opinion?
Well, I think that Chris Christie is just, that's who he is. I mean, he basically thought, I represent New Jersey. I'm fighting for New Jersey. We're in a terrible situation. This awful hurricane happened. The state's decimated. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get that done. I don't care if the president's running in the middle of a campaign. So I think a part of it was that also is in the aftermath of this election. I think the way you get elected now, it doesn't matter what each side says, is you got to be a leader that can be able to get the job done no matter what the partisanship is. And you got to be a leader first, and your party has to be second. We've had too many leaders that put their party first and the leader of the country second. I think Christie did that. I actually think Christie is in as good a position of anybody to be a national leader in the Republican Party in the aftermath of this. And the funny thing is, he did that by virtue of giving the president, a Democrat, a huge bear hug in the course of that. I think he did it primarily because he cared about his state.
There we go. ABC News political analyst and national journalist, columnist, Matthew Dowd. Matthew, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, New York City Housing Authority Chairman John Rhea about long-term options for public housing residents whose homes are too damaged to return to. Stay with us.